AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Shadows stretched across Boston's skyline as Itesh Blackwood hurried through the crowded streets, clutching her jacket tighter against the autumn chill. At 32, she had mastered the art of blending in, of making herself invisible amid the urban chaos. Her keen senses, sharper than she'd ever admit, registered every scent, every subtle shift in the air around her. Something felt different today. The research center where she worked as a cultural anthropologist specialized in indigenous traditions stood like a beacon of academia against the fading daylight. Inside, colleagues shuffled through papers and peered at computer screens, unaware of the restlessness that had plagued her for weeks. "You look like you haven't slept in days," remarked Dr. Harmon, sliding a stack of files across her desk. "These artifacts from the Katani tribe arrived this morning. Their authenticity needs verification before the exhibition." Itesh nodded, grateful for the distraction. "Thanks. I've been having strange dreams lately." "Well, make sure those dreams don't interfere with the deadline. The Katani representatives arrive in 3 days." After Harmon left, Itesh opened the first file. Her fingers trembled as she traced the outline of an ancient medallion photographed against stark white. The circular pendant featured intricate engravings of wolves encircling a crescent moon. Something about it resonated deep within her, like a forgotten melody suddenly remembered. That night, in her apartment overlooking the Charles River, Itesh woke gasping, sheets tangled around her legs. The dream had been so vivid, running through dense forest, moonlight filtering through branches, her body transforming, becoming something other. She padded to the bathroom and splashed cold water on her face. In the mirror, her dark eyes reflected a momentary golden gleam before returning to their usual brown. The next morning, Itesh decided to visit the Native American Cultural Center in Cambridge, where the artifacts were being temporarily housed. The small, unassuming building was empty except for a security guard, who barely glanced up from his crossword puzzle. As she approached the display case containing the medallion, a voice behind her broke the silence. "The Moonsinger's Talisman. A powerful object for one so uninitiated." Itesh spun around, confronted by a man whose presence commanded the room. Tall and broad-shouldered, with copper skin and penetrating amber eyes, he moved with fluid grace that seemed almost predatory. His black hair was pulled back, revealing sharp cheekbones and a strong jaw tensed in assessment. "I'm Itesh Blackwood, from the Anthropological Research Center," she managed, extending her hand. "Pakuna," he replied simply, ignoring her outstretched palm. "Guardian of the Katani artifacts." "Guardian? I thought the delegation wasn't arriving until..." "Some treasures require constant protection, Ms. Blackwood." His gaze traveled to her neck, where a small birthmark shaped like a crescent moon had always marked her skin, especially from those who might not understand their significance. Something in his tone raised her defenses. "I assure you, I treat all cultural artifacts with the utmost respect." "Artifacts?" A humorless smile curved his lips. "Is that what you think these are? Mere relics of a forgotten past?" "I didn't mean..." "You bear the mark," he interrupted, reaching toward her neck but stopping short of touching her. "The Katani. Call it Wakanzi, chosen one." Itesh stepped back, alarm bells ringing. "I think you're mistaking me for someone else." "There's no mistake." His voice lowered. "The dreams have started, haven't they? The running, the transformation, the call of something wild you can't quite name." Her mouth went dry. "How could you possibly..." Your grandmother never told you, did she? About your lineage? About why your family fled from their homeland? My grandmother died when I was 15. Itesh clutched her bag tighter. And my family history is none of your business. On the contrary. Pakuna's eyes flashed gold, exactly like hers had in the mirror. Your history is precisely my business. The blood of the Katani runs through your veins, diluted but undeniable. You are a descendant of Saka, the great alpha female who saved our tribe from extinction 2 centuries ago. Itesh laughed nervously. Look, I don't know what kind of game you're playing, but no games, Itesh. Only destiny. He reached for the medallion in the case, his hand passing through the supposedly unbreakable glass as if it were mist. Tonight is the Hunter's Moon, the first full moon of autumn. The veil between what you think you are and what you truly are will thin. When it does, you'll need this. He pressed the cold metal into her palm, closing her fingers around it. Where their skin touched, electricity seemed to arc between them. I can't take this. It's a priceless artifact, Itesh protested. But even as she spoke, the medallion warmed against her skin, the engravings beginning to glow with a faint blue light. It was always meant for you, Pakuna said, his expression softening slightly. I've waited a long time to find you, Itesh Blackwood. Or should I say, Itesh of the Moonshadow Clan. You're insane, she whispered, backing away. I'm calling security. They won't see me, he replied calmly. Just as they didn't see you take the medallion. Itesh glanced toward the guard, who continued his crossword, oblivious to the theft occurring mere feet away. What have you done? She demanded. What needed to be done? Pakuna moved toward the exit. Tonight, when the moon rises, place the medallion against your birthmark. It will awaken what has always been dormant within you. Then come find me. In the Middlesex Fells Reservation, your instincts will guide you. And if I don't? His amber eyes darkened. Then you condemn not only yourself but your entire bloodline to the shadows. The hunters have already sensed your awakening. They've tracked you to Boston. Hunters? What hunters? Those who have sought to exterminate our kind for centuries. The Silver Blades. His expression grew grave. They murdered your parents, Itesh. It wasn't a car accident. The floor seemed to tilt beneath her. That's not possible. You can't know that. I know because I was there. I failed to save them, but I swore to protect their daughter. Pakuna paused at the door. Tonight, under the Hunter's Moon, you'll remember everything. The choice to embrace or deny your heritage will be yours alone to make. As he vanished into the sunlight outside, Itesh stood frozen, the impossible, weight of the medallion in her hand and his words in her mind. She looked down at the ancient piece, its engravings now dormant, but unmistakably calling to something primal within her. The security guard finally looked up. Did you say something, miss? Itesh clutched the medallion tighter, feeling it pulse like a second heartbeat against her palm. No, she whispered. Nothing at all. But as she left the cultural center, the certainty grew with each step. Her entire life had been built on carefully constructed lies. And tonight, under Pakuna's spell, those foundations would crumble. Twilight descended over Boston as Itesh paced her apartment, the medallion burning a hole in her pocket, and Pakuna's words echoing in her mind. Outside, the full moon began its ascent, casting silver light through her windows. She'd canceled her evening plans, called in sick to work, and spent hours researching the Katani tribe, finding only fragmentary references to a reclusive indigenous group from the Pacific Northwest who had seemingly vanished from historical records in the IDE, late 1800s. Her phone buzzed with another message from Dr. Harmon. Where is the medallion? Security footage shows you as the last person to access it. Call me immediately. Guilt and panic surged through her. In one day, she'd become a thief, jeopardized. Her career, and was now contemplating meeting a stranger in the woods based on outlandish claims about her heritage. Insanity. Yet the dreams that had plagued her for weeks now made a terrible kind of sense. The running on four legs instead of two, the heightened senses, the inexplicable pull of the moon. "This isn't happening," she muttered. But even as she denied it, her skin prickled with awareness. The moonlight streaming through her window seemed to call to her. An irresistible siren song. With trembling fingers, she removed the medallion from her pocket. In the moonlight, the engraved wolves seemed to move across the surface, their silver bodies flowing around the crescent moon at the center. Before she could reconsider, Itesh pressed the cool metal against the crescent-shaped birthmark on her neck. Pain, sharp and electric, lanced through her body. She fell to her knees, gasping as images flooded her mind. A small village nestled in dense forest. People shifting from human to wolf form under moonlight. Her mother, so much younger, running through woods with wild abandon. Silver-wielding attackers descending in the night. The screams of the dying, being hidden in a hollowed tree trunk by her father. Pakuna, bloodied but fierce, fighting to save her parents, flames consuming everything. When the vision subsided, Itesh found herself curled on the floor, tears streaming down her face. The medallion had left a perfect imprint on her skin, the mark now glowing with the same blue light as the engravings. "I remember," she whispered to the empty room. "I remember everything." Her body felt different, stronger, more alive. Scents she'd never noticed filled her nostrils. Her neighbor's curry dinner three apartments away, the colony of mice living in the building's walls, the approaching rain still miles distant. Her hearing had sharpened too, picking up conversations from the street below as clearly as if the speakers stood beside her. Without conscious decision, Itesh found herself driving toward Middlesex Fells Reservation, the medallion now hanging around her neck, a constant warm presence against her skin. The sprawling woodland preserve north of the city was deserted at this hour, the parking area empty save for a single black truck. As she stepped from her car, the scent hit her immediately. Wild, masculine, powerful. Pakuna. She could smell him in the air, a complex mixture of pine, earth, and something uniquely him. Following the scent trail, she moved into the trees with newfound confidence, her feet finding purchase on the darkened path as if she'd walked it 1,000 times before. She found him in a clearing, bathed in moonlight. He'd removed his shirt, revealing a torso mapped with tribal tattoos that seemed to shift and move across his skin in the silvery light. The largest design, spanning his broad back, depicted the same wolf pack and crescent moon from the medallion. "You came," he said without turning, his voice deeper than she remembered. "You knew I would." She stepped into the clearing. "The medallion showed me everything. My parents. The attack. You." Now he turned, his amber eyes glowing gold in the darkness. "Not everything, Itesh. Only fragments. Your complete memory will return gradually, as your body remembers what it means to be Katani. What exactly are we?" The question that had burned within her since the visions began. "Shapeshifters is the simplest term, though the Katani consider it reductive. We are guardians of the natural world, blessed by the moon goddess to walk, between human and wolf form, tasked with maintaining balance between the worlds." He approached slowly, circling her with that same predatory grace. "Your grandmother was my alpha's sister. When the Silver Blades attacked our settlement, she fled with your mother, then just a child, breaking from the pack to protect the bloodline. She suppressed your mother's shifting abilities through ancient herbs and rituals, hoping to keep you both hidden from those who would destroy us. But my mother died anyway," Itesh whispered. Pakuna's expression darkened. "The Silver Blades are relentless hunters. They found your parents 15 years ago, tracked them to that lonely stretch of highway. I arrived too late to save them, but I managed to obscure your scent trail. You were away at college, a blessing that saved your life. And you've been watching me since then? For 15 years? Indignation flared within her. Protecting you, he corrected. From a distance, until your dormant abilities began to awaken on their own. That's when I knew it was time. Time? For what? Instead of answering, Pakuna gestured toward the full moon above them. The hunter's moon is sacred to our people. It marks the season when prey is fattest and easiest to track. When we are at our strongest, it's the perfect night for your first shift. Alarm rippled through her. Shift? As in, turn into a wolf? I don't know how. Your body remembers, even if your mind doesn't. He moved closer, his heat radiating against her skin. The medallion has awakened your blood. Now you must surrender to it. What if I don't want this? Itesh challenged, though even as she spoke, something wild inside her strained toward the freedom he offered. Then walk away. His voice was soft but unyielding. Return to your human life, your human colleagues. But know this, the Silver Blades have sensed your awakening. They're already in Boston. Without the protection of the pack, they will find you, and they will show no mercy. Before she could respond, Pakuna stepped back and began to change. It wasn't the violent, bone-breaking transformation of horror movies. Instead, he seemed to shimmer, his form blurring at the edges as fur rippled across his skin. In seconds, where the man had stood, a massive black wolf now watched her with intelligent golden eyes. Itesh gasped, stumbling backward. The wolf, Pakuna, padded toward her, nudging her hand with his muzzle. The contact sent another jolt through her system, igniting something primal and urgent within her cells. Her skin began to tingle, a pleasant warmth spreading through her limbs. She felt her consciousness expanding, her senses heightening even further. The medallion at her throat pulsed with blue light, and suddenly she understood what needed to happen. Instinctively, Itesh raised her face to the moon and surrendered to the transformation. Her body responded eagerly, shifting and reforming with surprising ease. She fell forward onto four paws, her world exploding into sharper focus as wolf senses overtook human limitations. Pakuna circled her sleek white form, his satisfaction evident even without words. In this shape, they needed no human language. His thoughts brushed against hers, a mental connection that transcended speech. You are magnificent, his mind whispered into hers. A true daughter of Sakka. The exhilaration of the shift overwhelmed her. Itesh bounded across the clearing, testing her new form, reveling in the strength and speed her wolf body possessed. Everything felt right, as if she'd finally found a piece of herself that had been missing her entire life. Pakuna loped beside her as they raced through the forest, teaching her without words how to navigate this new reality. For hours, they ran under the hunter's moon, two wolves connected by blood and destiny. When exhaustion finally overtook her, they returned to the clearing. Transforming back proved more challenging than the initial shift, but with Pakuna's guidance, Itesh eventually stood on human legs again, breathless and euphoric. That was... She struggled to find words adequate to the experience. Home, Pakuna supplied, now returned to human form as well. What you felt was your spirit recognizing its true nature. She nodded, unable to deny the rightness of the transformation. What happens now? Now you meet your people. He gestured toward the trees, where pairs of golden eyes had appeared watching them. The remnants of our tribe have gathered. 27 survivors, scattered across the country. They've come for you, Itesh. From the shadows emerged men and women of varying ages, all bearing the same watchful intensity as Pakuna. An older woman stepped forward, her silver-streaked hair framing a face lined with both wisdom and sorrow. I am Nara, keeper of the Katani histories, she announced, her voice melodic yet commanding. Daughter of Sokka's line, We welcome you home. Itesh felt the weight of their expectations pressing down on her. I don't understand what you want from me. Want? A bitter laugh came from a young man at the edge of the group. We need you, princess, whether either of us likes it or not. Silence, Meko! Pakuna growled, his authority evident in the way the younger man immediately lowered his gaze. Nara approached Itesh, taking her hands. The medallion responded to you because you carry the alpha bloodline of Sokka. In our tradition, leadership passes through the female line. Since your mother's death, we have been without a true alpha female, without balance. Wait, Itesh pulled her hands away. You think I'm going to lead you? I just learned shapeshifters exist a few hours ago. Which is why you need training, Pakuna interjected. Time to learn our ways, our history. Time we don't have. The Silver Blades have grown stronger, Nara explained. Led by Callum Ravenwolf, they've developed new weapons, new methods for hunting our kind. Three packs in Canada have been completely exterminated in the past year alone. Ravenwolf? The name stirred something in Itesh's recovered memories. He was there the night my parents died. Pakuna's expression darkened. Callum Ravenwolf is the most dangerous hunter alive. His family has dedicated themselves to eradicating shapeshifters for 9 generations. He personally led the attack on your parents. And now he's here in Boston, added Meko, with at least 12 heavily armed hunters. They've been systematically searching the city for 3 days. Cold dread pooled in Itesh's stomach. My colleagues at the research center, Dr. Harmon, knows I took the medallion. The assembled Katani exchanged alarmed glances. We need to move quickly, Pakuna decided. Nara, take half the pack to secure Itesh's apartment. Meko, your group will monitor the research center. Itesh comes with me to the safe house. As the others melted back into the forest, Pakuna turned to her. I know this is overwhelming, but you must trust me. Your life depends on it. And if I don't? She challenged, though her resistance was weakening with each revelation. Then, Callum Ravenwolf will hang your pelt on his wall beside those of your parents, he replied bluntly, and the Katani bloodline will end forever. The harsh truth silenced her protests. As they walked back toward the parking area, a sudden crack split the night air. Pakuna shoved her down as something whistled past her ear. Silver bullets, he hissed, pulling her behind a massive oak. They've found us. From the darkness came a cultured voice, its English accent crisp in the night air. Pakuna of the Katani, still playing protector to the last moonshadow heir? How predictably sentimental. Pakuna's body tensed, his eyes flashing gold with rage. Ravenwolf. The very same. A tall figure stepped into a patch of moonlight, silver blonde hair gleaming almost white. His patrician features might have been handsome if not for the cold calculation in his pale eyes. He carried an ornate rifle with practiced ease. And you must be Itesh Blackwood. Your parents proved disappointingly easy to kill. I wonder if you'll provide more sport. Pakuna's growl rumbled deep in his chest, the sound more wolf than human. Run, Itesh. Now. But as she turned to flee, something sharp struck her neck. A dart, its contents already emptying into her bloodstream. The world tilted sideways as Pakuna roared with fury, launching himself at Ravenwolf. The last thing Itesh saw before darkness claimed her was Pakuna's body arcing through the air, beginning to shift even as Ravenwolf raised his weapon. Then nothing but shadows, and the eye, echoing sound of her own heartbeat slowing to a treacherous rhythm. Darkness gave way to fragmented consciousness as Itesh fought against the effects of the tranquilizer. Her mouth felt stuffed with cotton, her limbs leaden and unresponsive. Through half-closed eyes, she registered her surroundings. A windowless room with concrete walls, a single metal door, and the acrid smell of silver and wolf's bane permeating the air. Forcing herself fully awake, She discovered her wrists and ankles bound with silver chains that burned against her skin. The medallion had been removed from her neck, leaving her feeling strangely hollow. Across the room, slumped against the wall and similarly restrained, was Pakuna. Blood matted his hair and dripped from a wound in his side. "Pakuna," she whispered, her voice cracking from thirst. "Pakuna, wake up." His eyes flickered open, immediately finding hers. "Itesh, are you hurt?" "Just drugged. You're bleeding." "Silver bullet." He grimaced, shifting position with obvious pain. "They've taken us to their Boston facility, an old bunker beneath the harbor district." "How do you know?" "The smell of salt water and diesel. I've tracked this place before, but never been inside." His gaze sharpened. "Did they take the medallion?" She nodded miserably. "I've failed everyone already." "No." Despite his injuries, his voice remained strong. "The medallion served its purpose, awakening your abilities. They can't undo that." The door swung open, revealing Callum Ravenwolf flanked by two armed guards. In the harsh fluorescent light, Itesh could see him clearly, tall and elegantly, dressed in a tailored suit, his silver blonde hair swept back from aristocratic features. He might have stepped from a fashion magazine if not for the cold calculation in his ice-blue eyes. "Ah, our guests are awake." His British accent lent a cultured veneer to words dripping with disdain. "Itesh Blackwood, anthropologist, PhD from Columbia, specialist in indigenous cultural practices." He circled her slowly. "How delightfully ironic that you've dedicated your life to studying the very thing you are." "What do you want from us?" she demanded, struggling against her restraints. "Information primarily, cooperation ideally." Ravenwolf pulled up a metal chair, sitting just beyond their reach. "You see, I'm something of a scientist myself. For generations, my family has studied your kind, your physiology, your abilities, your weaknesses." "You mean hunted and murdered?" "Us," Pakuna growled. Ravenwolf shrugged elegantly. "Semantics. We provide a necessary service, culling dangerous predators who masquerade as humans." He turned back to Itesh. "But you're special, aren't you? A direct descendant of Sokka, carrying the purest Katani bloodline." The way he said it sent chills down her spine. "How do you know about my ancestry?" "Your parents were rather forthcoming before they died." His smile never reached his eyes. "Well, your father was. Your mother proved more resilient. But everyone breaks eventually." Pakuna lunged against his chains, snarling as the silver burned deeper into his wrists. "I'll kill you for what you did to them." "You're hardly in a position to make threats." Ravenwolf didn't even flinch. "Now, Ms. Blackwood, I require the location of the Katani Sanctuary and access to your ancestral grimoire." "I don't know what you're talking about," she replied honestly. "No, perhaps this will refresh your memory." He removed the medallion from his pocket, holding it tantalizingly out of reach. "A remarkable artifact. Our tests show it's over 4 centuries old. Yet the silver remains uncorroded, the magic undiminished. Your tribe's most sacred relic." "It's just a medallion," Itesh insisted, though the sight of it made her heart ache with longing. "Just a medallion?" Ravenwolf laughed coldly. "This is the key to Sokka's grimoire, the collection of Shapeshifter, magic that allegedly allows for transformation without the limitations of the moon cycle. Imagine, Shifters able to change form at will, regardless of lunar phases. A terrifying prospect for humanity." Itesh glanced at Pakuna, whose expression had become carefully blank. Was what Ravenwolf saying true? "I've spent decades searching for that grimoire," Ravenwolf continued. "Your parents died protecting its location. Now the responsibility falls to you." "Even if such a thing existed," Pakuna interrupted, "Itesh wouldn't know where to find it. She's been separated from her heritage her entire life." "Perhaps." Ravenwolf stood, straightening his immaculate suit. but blood remembers what the mind forgets. With the right encouragement, those memories can surface. He nodded to one of the guards, who wheeled in a metal cart covered with a cloth. When Ravenwolf pulled back the covering, Itesh gasped at the array of surgical instruments laid out in precise rows, all made of polished silver. "Silver penetrates shifter flesh more effectively than any other metal," Ravenwolf explained conversationally. "Something about the molecular structure interferes with your accelerated healing." "Fascinating, really." "You're insane," Itesh whispered. "On the contrary, I'm methodical." He selected a slender silver scalpel. "Now, shall we begin with you? Or would you prefer I work on your protector first? Sometimes watching someone else's pain can be quite motivating." Before she could answer, alarms blared throughout the facility, red emergency lights flooding the room. "Perimeter breach in Sector 7, announced a mechanical voice over the intercom. "Multiple intruders detected." Ravenwolf's composed facade cracked slightly. "Watch them," he ordered the guards. "I'll handle this interruption." As he strode from the room, one guard positioned himself by the door, while the other stood watch over the prisoners, weapon trained on Pakuna. "Your pack?" Itesh whispered, hope flaring. Pakuna nodded almost imperceptibly. "They would never abandon us. But we need to be ready." He shifted position, grimacing as the movement reopened his wound. "The silver is weakening me. When the opportunity comes, you must run, regardless of what happens to me." "I'm not leaving you," she insisted, his golden eyes locked with hers. "You must. The grimoire is real, Itesh, and it is vital that Ravenwolf never finds it. If I die here, the knowledge dies with me." "Stop talking," barked the guard, stepping closer with his weapon raised. The distant sound of gunfire and snarling filtered through the walls. The pack was fighting its way toward them. But would they arrive in time? The answer came sooner than expected. The ventilation grate near the ceiling exploded inward, and a blur of russet fur launched into the room. Mecco in wolf form landed on the first guard, his jaws closing around the man's throat before he could fire his weapon. The second guard spun to shoot, but a massive gray wolf burst through the door behind him. In the chaos, Itesh recognized Nara's distinctive silver-streaked fur as the older woman took down the remaining captor. Both wolves shifted back to human form, moving quickly to release the prisoners. "The medallion," Itesh gasped as Mecco freed her from the silver chains. "Ravenwolf has it." "Forget the medallion," Pakuna ordered, struggling to stand despite Nara's support. "We need to get out now." "But you said it was the key to the grimoire." "Later," he cut her off. "We have minutes before Ravenwolf realizes this was a diversion." "Diversion?" Itesh repeated, confusion evident in her voice. Mecco grinned fiercely. "Half the pack is creating havoc on the east side of the compound while we extract you." "Classic. Misdirection." Freed from her restraints, Itesh helped support Pakuna as they moved into the corridor. The facility was a maze of concrete passages lit by emergency lights, the alarm still blaring. "Can you shift?" Nara asked Pakuna, concern evident in her voice. He shook his head grimly. "The silver bullet is still inside me. I can't transform until it's removed." "Then we do this the hard way." Mecco took point, leading them through the labyrinthine complex. They encountered two more guards, dispatched efficiently by Nara and Mecco in partial shifts, their faces elongating to muzzles, claws extending from human hands in a horrifying display of controlled transformation Itesh hadn't known was possible. "How are they doing that?" she whispered to Pakuna as they navigated another corridor. "Partial shifting," he explained through gritted teeth. "An advanced technique. Something you'll learn, if we survive this." At last, they reached an emergency exit that led to a loading dock. Outside, the night air carried the scents of the harbor, salt, fish, and diesel fumes. A van waited with its engine running, another pack member at the wheel. As they hurried toward it, a shot rang out. Mekko crumpled to the ground, a silver bullet in his thigh. Itesh turned to see Ravenwolf advancing toward them, his rifle raised for another shot. "Fascinating rescue attempt," he called out, his composure regained despite a bloody gash across his forehead. But ultimately futile. Nara pushed Itesh and Pakuna toward the van. "Go. I'll hold him off." "No." Pakuna resisted, but his weakened state made him easy to maneuver. Nara fixed Itesh with an intense stare. "The future of our people rests with you now, daughter of Sokka. Pakuna knows. The way. Trust him." Before Itesh could protest, Nara charged Ravenwolf, her body shifting mid-stride into a magnificent silver wolf. The hunter pivoted to fire, but Nara's momentum carried them both to the ground, his rifle skittering across the pavement. "Get in!" shouted the driver as Itesh helped the wounded Pakuna into the van. Mekko dragged himself in behind them, clutching his injured leg. The last thing Itesh saw as the van peeled away was Nara pinning Ravenwolf to the ground, her massive jaws closing around his arm as he plunged a silver dagger into her side.
"Nara!" she cried. But the van was already turning the corner, the loading dock disappearing from view. She knew the risks, Pakuna said quietly, his face ashen from blood loss. "As we all do." The driver navigated the darkened streets with
practiced ease, putting distance between them and the Silverblade facility. In the back of the van, Mekko had managed to extract the bullet from his thigh, his face contorted in pain. "Where are we going?" Itesh asked, applying pressure to Pakuna's wound. "Safe house in the Berkshires," the driver answered. "About 2 hours west. The others will meet us there. Those who survive." The gravity of their situation sank in. People had risked, and likely lost, their lives to rescue her. A woman who barely understood what she was or why she mattered so much to their survival. "We need to go back for Nara," she insisted. "We can't," Mekko said grimly. "If she survived, she'll find her way to us. If not..." He left the sentence unfinished. "The silver bullet," Pakuna gasped, his breathing labored. "It needs to come out." Itesh looked at his wound with trepidation. "I don't know how. I'll talk you through it." His golden eyes met hers, filled with pain, but unwavering trust. "You can do this, Itesh." With trembling hands and Mekko's assistance, she extracted the silver bullet from Pakuna's side, using a field medical kit stored in the van. The metal sizzled with his blood, leaving a burn mark on the floor where she dropped it. Once free of the silver, Pakuna's natural healing began, the wound slowly knitting together before her eyes. By the time they reached the safe house, a secluded cabin nestled in the dense forests of the Berkshires, he could walk unassisted. Inside, they found three more pack members waiting, faces grim with news of casualties. Of the 27, Katani, who had gathered for Itesh's awakening, only 17 remained. Nara was among the confirmed losses. That night, as the survivors tended their wounds and planned their next move, Itesh stepped outside onto the cabin's porch. The waning moon cast silver shadows across the wilderness, a beauty now forever linked with both freedom and danger in her mind. Pakuna joined her, his presence a comfort she hadn't expected to need. "I'm sorry about Nara," she said softly, "and the others who died because of me." "Not because of you," he corrected. "For you. There's a difference. They chose to fight for the future of our people." "A future I'm not sure I can provide." She turned to face him. "Ravenwolf said the medallion is the key to Sokka's grimoire, a book of shapeshifter magic. Is that true?" Pakuna was silent for a long moment, his eyes scanning the dark forest as if searching for listeners. "Yes," he finally admitted. The grimoire contains the accumulated knowledge of our people, including the ancient ritual that would allow us to shift without the moon's influence. Why is that so important? Because our greatest vulnerability is predictability. The Silver Blades know we're strongest during the full moon, but weakened as it wanes. They plan their attacks accordingly. His voice lowered. With the ability to shift at will, regardless of lunar phase, we could finally defend ourselves effectively, perhaps even reclaim territories lost generations ago. And the medallion is the key? But Ravenwolf has it now. Pakuna's lips curved in a rare smile. He has a medallion, certainly. Understanding dawned on Itesh's face. It's a fake? Not exactly. It's one of three identical medallions created by Sokka herself. A safeguard against exactly this situation. Only one opens the grimoire's lock, and only when wielded by a direct female descendant of Sokka's line. Hope flickered within her. So even with the medallion, Ravenwolf can't access the grimoire, not without you. His expression grew serious again. Which is why he won't stop hunting you. And why tomorrow, we must retrieve the real medallion and locate the grimoire before he realizes his mistake. Where is it? Pakuna's gaze turned distant. The true medallion has been hidden in plain sight for over a century, in your grandmother's grave. Morning brought hushed preparations as the pack readied for what might be their most desperate mission yet. Itesh, still processing the revelations of the past 24 hours, found herself struggling to reconcile the woman she'd been with the shapeshifter she was becoming. The cabin buzzed with activity, weapons being cleaned, maps studied, contingency, plans debated. Among the survivors, Itesh noticed a striking young woman with piercing green eyes who kept her distance, watching Itesh with undisguised suspicion. Who is she? Itesh asked Meko, as he adjusted the bandage on his healing thigh. Selina. He followed Itesh's gaze. Pakuna's sister, and until your arrival, the acting alpha female of our pack. The information landed with uncomfortable weight. I'm displacing her. In the pack hierarchy, yes. Meko's expression was carefully neutral. Blood trumps merit in Katani tradition, regardless of experience. Before Itesh could respond, Pakuna called the group together. 17 pairs, of eyes fixed on him as he outlined their plan. Ravenwolf won't expect us to make another move so soon, he began. That gives us a narrow advantage. Itesh's grandmother is buried in Green Meadows Cemetery outside Worcester, about an hour. From here, small team. Myself, Itesh, Meko, and Selene. Selene stepped forward, her voice cool and measured. Why me? Because you're the best tracker we have, Pakuna replied without hesitation. And because if we encounter Silver Blades, your skills with silver-resistant weaponry are unmatched. The acknowledgement seemed to mollify Selene slightly. She nodded once, her gaze flicking briefly to Itesh, before returning to her brother. The rest of you will secure our fallback position in the White Mountains, Pakuna continued. If we don't, return by moonrise tomorrow, assume the worst, and implement the Diaspora Protocol. A solemn mood settled over the group as the meaning of his words sank in. Diaspora Protocol meant scattering the survivors across the continent, essentially accepting the end of the Katani as a unified tribe. As the others dispersed to prepare, Pakuna pulled Itesh aside. There's something you should know before we leave, he said quietly. About your grandmother. They stepped outside, autumn leaves crunching beneath their feet as they walked a short distance from the cabin. My grandmother died when I was 15, Itesh said. Cancer. I barely knew. She was always distant, almost afraid of getting close to me. She had reason to fear. Pakuna stopped beside a small stream. Marissa Blackwood, born Marissa of the Moonshadow Clan, carried a terrible burden. After your mother's birth, she made choices that haunt our people to this day. Itesh tensed. What choices? When your mother was just an infant, Silver Blades, attacked your grandmother's settlement in Oregon. Your grandfather, a human who had married into the pack, died defending them. Pakuna's voice grew heavy with the weight of history. Marissa fled with your mother, but she did something unforgivable in her desperation. She made a deal with Callum Ravenwolf's father. What? The revelation hit like a physical blow. My grandmother worked with the Silverblades? Not exactly. She traded information, the location of a rival pack, in exchange for her daughter's safety. The Silverblades massacred 23 shifters on that information, including children. Itesh felt sick. Why are you telling me this now? Because what awaits at your grandmother's grave is more than just the medallion. There's a letter, written in her final days, a confession, and possibly the location of the grimoire itself. His golden eyes held hers. You need to be prepared for what? You might learn about your family's complicated history. The drive to Worcester passed in tense silence. Celine drove, her posture rigid, while Mecco monitored police frequencies on a modified scanner. Pakuna and Itesh sat in the back, each lost in their own thoughts. Green Meadows Cemetery appeared. Abandoned in the late morning light, its wrought iron gates standing open beneath a canopy of autumn-tinged trees. They parked discreetly at the far end, out of sight from the main road. "I'll scout the perimeter," Selena announced, slipping from the car with liquid grace. She disappeared among the headstones before anyone could respond. "Is she always so intense?" Itesh asked as they followed at a slower pace. "Selene has lost more than most," Mecco replied. "Her mate was killed by Silverblades 3 years ago. She's been focused ever since." Itesh led them to her grandmother's grave, a simple headstone in the older section of the cemetery. "Marissa Blackwood," it read, with only dates beneath the name. No loving mother, no devoted grandmother, no rest in peace. Just a marker of time past. "What now?" she asked, looking to Pakuna. "Now we dig," he replied grimly. The exhumation was both physically grueling and emotionally jarring. Though they took turns, the autumn ground was hard, resistant to their efforts. By the time they reached the casket, the sun had begun its westward descent. Celine returned from her patrol, her face taut with worry. "We need to hurry. I picked up unfamiliar scents at the north entrance. Someone's been here recently, with silver ammunition." Pakuna nodded, redoubling his efforts to clear the dirt from the casket lid. When it was finally exposed, they confronted another problem. How to open a sealed coffin without appearing to desecrate a grave should anyone happen upon them. "Stand back," Celine said suddenly, producing a thin metal tool from her jacket. With practiced precision, she manipulated the casket's locking mechanism until it gave way with a soft click. The lid lifted to reveal Marissa Blackwood's remains and, clutched in her skeletal hands, a small wooden box inlaid with silver and mother of pearl. "The Moonwood box," Pakuna breathed. "It's really here." With reverent care, Itesh reached down and took the box from her grandmother's grasp. As her fingers closed around it, a jolt of recognition passed through her, as if the box somehow knew her, acknowledged her bloodline. "We should go," Mecco urged, glancing nervously toward the cemetery entrance. They refilled the grave as quickly as possible, though not as neatly as they had excavated it. As they worked, Itesh kept the box tucked securely in her jacket, its weight both physical and symbolic against her heart. They were halfway back to the car when Selene suddenly froze, her nostrils flaring. "Silverblades," she hissed. "Close." The crack of a rifle confirmed her warning. A bullet splintered the headstone beside them, sending marble fragments flying.
"Run!"
Pakuna shoved Itesh forward as more shots rang out. They scattered among the monuments, using the stone markers as cover. Itesh glimpsed their attackers, four figures in tactical gear moving with military precision through the cemetery.
"This way!"
Mecco appeared at her side, pulling her toward a mausoleum. They ducked inside just as bullets ricocheted off the stone facade. "Where are Pacuna and Celine?" she gasped, clutching the box tighter. Mecco peered carefully around. The entrance. Drawing them off, standard protocol, protect the alpha female at all costs. "That's ridiculous. I barely know what I'm doing." "Doesn't matter." His expression was deadly serious. "You carry the future of our people, both in your blood and in that box. Our lives are expendable. Yours isn't." The casual acceptance of their sacrifice stunned her into silence. Outside, the gunfire intensified, punctuated by snarls and shouts. Somewhere in the cemetery, Pacuna and Selene were fighting, perhaps dying, to buy her time. "We can't just hide," she finally said, resolution hardening her voice. "Not while they're risking everything." "What do you suggest?" Mecco asked, his tone suggesting he already knew and dreaded her answer. Itesh closed her eyes, feeling the pull of the moon even in daylight. The shift was coming easier now, her body remembering its true nature. "We fight back." Before Mecco could protest, she handed him the moonwood box. "Protect this. I'll create a diversion." She stepped from the mausoleum and surrendered to the transformation. In seconds, a sleek white wolf stood where Itesh had been, her fur almost luminous in the fading afternoon light. With a low growl, she bounded across the cemetery, deliberately drawing attention away from Mecco's position. The Silverblade hunters pivoted toward this new threat, their weapons tracking her movement. Itesh used her speed and agility to lead them on a chaotic chase through the headstones, always staying just ahead of their silver bullets. From the corner of her eye, she caught flashes of black fur. Pacuna, also in wolf form, circling behind the hunters. Suddenly, he launched himself at the rearmost Silverblade, powerful jaws closing on the man's gun arm. The coordinated attack continued as Selene emerged in her russet wolf form, taking down another hunter with brutal efficiency. The remaining two Silverblades found themselves surrounded as Mecco joined the fray, having secured the box somewhere safe. In the ensuing melee, Itesh discovered her own fighting instincts, an ancestral memory of fang and claw that guided her movements. She brought down one of the remaining hunters, her teeth finding the vulnerable spot between helmet and body armor. The last Silverblade, realizing he was outnumbered, made a desperate break for the cemetery entrance. Pacuna moved to pursue, but Itesh's bark stopped him. They had what they came for, and retreat was wiser than risking further confrontation. Back in human form and reunited at the car, they took stock of their injuries. Selene had suffered a grazing wound from a silver bullet across her shoulder, while Mecco had retrieved the moonwood box unharmed. "That was either incredibly brave or incredibly stupid," Pacuna told Itesh as they sped away, his tone suggesting he hadn't decided which. "I couldn't let you die for me," she replied simply. "Not when I haven't earned that kind of sacrifice." Something shifted in Celine's expression as she caught Itesh's words in the rearview mirror. Not quite respect, but perhaps the beginning of reassessment. Miles from the cemetery, in the safety of deep forest, they finally stopped to examine their prize. The moonwood box, carved from the rare lunar receptive wood of ancient times, was sealed with no visible lock or hinge. "Only Sokka's blood can open it," Pacuna explained. Itesh ran her fingers over the smooth surface, feeling subtle engravings. Beneath her touch, wolves running beneath a crescent moon, the same imagery from the medallion. Without being told what to do, she pressed her thumb against the central moon image, wincing as a hidden needle pricked her skin. Her blood was absorbed into the wood, which began to glow with a soft blue light. The box opened silently, revealing its contents. The true medallion, larger and more intricately detailed than the one Ravenwolf had taken, and beneath it, a sealed envelope yellowed with age. "My grandmother's letter," Itesh whispered, carefully removing it. The paper crackled as she broke the seal and unfolded her grandmother's final confession. The handwriting was shaky but determined, the words cutting across decades to speak, directly to a granddaughter Marissa had known would someday need the truth. "My dearest Itesh, if you are reading this, then the blood of the Katani has awakened in you, and the burden I sought to spare you has found you nonetheless. For this, I can only ask forgiveness, though I know I deserve none. What Pakuna will have told you about my betrayal is true. In my desperation to protect your mother, I made a terrible bargain with monsters. The weight of those deaths has haunted me every day since. But there is more to the story, a truth I have kept even from those few Katani who still acknowledge my existence. Your grandfather was not who they believe. Robert Blackwood was no ordinary human who married into our pack. He was born Robert Ravenwolf, younger brother to Edmund Ravenwolf, Callum's father. He rejected his family's legacy of hatred and chose love instead, changing his name and fleeing with me when we fell in love. This is why Edmund granted my desperate plea, not from mercy, but because your mother carried both bloodlines. The Silverblades have their own prophecy, you see, that one born of both hunter and hunted would end the ancient conflict. Edmund believed that child was your mother, and later, you. The grimoire you seek is hidden where the two worlds meet, in the foundation stones of the Ravenwolf ancestral home. Beneath the main house of the Ravenwolf estate in the Adirondacks lies a chamber known only to those of both bloodlines. The medallion will guide you there, but beware. The grimoire contains power that could destroy as easily as save. You are neither Holy Katani nor Holy Silverblade, my beautiful granddaughter. You stand between worlds, carrying the potential to heal or deepen the ancient wound between them. Choose wisely where others, myself included, have chosen poorly. With love and regret, Marissa." The letter slipped from Itesh's trembling fingers, landing softly on the forest floor. The revelation crashed through her like a tidal wave, reshaping everything she thought she knew about herself and her place in this conflict. "Itesh?" Pakuna's voice seemed to come from very far away. "What does it say?" She looked up at the three faces watching her. Pakuna's concerned, Meko's curious, Selene's guarded, and realized that this revelation would change everything between them as well. "I'm half Silverblade," she whispered, the words burning, her throat like silver. "Callum Ravenwolf is my blood relative." The ensuing silence was deafening, broken only by the distant call of a crow taking flight. Twilight descended on the Katani safe house, where Itesh's revelation had ignited a firestorm of reactions. Some pack members called for her immediate rejection, while others argued that her dual heritage might be the very advantage they needed against their ancient enemy. In the midst of the chaos, Itesh stood alone on the cabin's porch, clutching her grandmother's letter and the true medallion. The metal seemed to pulse against her palm in time with her heartbeat, as if alive and aware of the momentous choice before her. Behind her, the door opened and closed softly. She didn't need to turn to know it was Pakuna. His scent, a mixture of pine and wild spices, had become as familiar to her as her own. "They're afraid," she said quietly. "I don't blame them. Fear makes poor counsel." He moved beside her, his shoulder just brushing hers. "But the pack will follow my lead, and I haven't changed my mind about you." "Maybe you should." She turned to face him, moonlight silvering her features. "Everything is different now. I'm the enemy, Pakuna." "No." His voice was firm, brooking no argument. "You're exactly who you've always been, a woman caught between worlds, trying to find her place. The only difference is now you understand why." "My grandfather was a Ravenwolf." The words still felt surreal. "Callum is my... what? Second cousin. And I'm supposed to lead the Katani against my own blood." "Blood isn't everything." His golden eyes held hers steadily. "Your grandfather proved that when he chose love, over hate. The question is, what will you choose? Before she could answer, Celine appeared in the doorway, her expression unreadable. "The council has reached a decision," she announced. "They want to hear from Itesh directly." Inside, the Yin remaining pack members had arranged themselves in a rough semicircle, their faces solemn in the firelight. Meko stood slightly apart, the moonwood box cradled protectively in his arms. "Itesh of the Moon Shadow Clan," began an older man she recognized as one of the elders who had survived the rescue. "Your blood carries both our salvation and our doom. Before we decide whether to follow you to the Ravenwolf Estate, we must know. Where do your loyalties lie?" All eyes fixed on her, waiting. In that moment, Itesh realized that no answer would satisfy everyone. The truth was more complex than simple loyalty. "My loyalty," she said finally, "is to ending this conflict. For generations, Katani and Silverblades have killed each other, each side believing themselves righteous. My existence proves what both sides have denied, that we are not so different after all." Murmurs rippled through the group, some approving, others skeptical. "Pretty words," challenged a young woman near the back. "But Silverblades murdered my parents. They would have killed you too, given the chance. How can we trust someone with their blood?" "Because I also carry the blood of those they hunted," Itesh replied. "I've felt the shift, experienced the freedom of running as wolf beneath the moon. That part of me is real and true." She touched the crescent birthmark on her neck. "Just as my human side is real and true. I am both, and I refuse to deny either heritage." Celine, who had remained silent until now, stepped forward. "My brother trusts you," she said, her voice carrying unexpected weight in the quiet room. "And while I questioned his judgment at first, I've seen how you fight. Not just with fang and claw, but with heart. You could have fled the cemetery today, saved yourself. Instead, you risked everything to protect the pack." She paused, seeming to choose her next words carefully. "The old prophecy speaks of one born of both worlds, who would either end our people or save them. I believe now that choice belongs to you, Itesh, and I choose to trust you'll make the right one." Her unexpected support shifted the mood in the room. One by one, the pack members voiced their decisions until a majority had pledged to follow. Itesh to the Ravenwolf Estate, with only three dissenters who chose to implement their own diaspora protocol. As the meeting disbanded, Pakuna pulled Itesh aside. "There's something we haven't discussed," he said quietly. "According to your grandmother's letter, the grimoire is hidden beneath the main house, in the heart of Silverblade territory. Accessing, it won't be simple infiltration. It will mean confronting Callum directly." "I know." The weight of this responsibility settled on her shoulders. "And there's more. The prophecy Celine mentioned. I think my grandmother knew about it. It's why she kept me away from both worlds." "The prophecy is ancient," Pakuna acknowledged. "A child of dual heritage who would stand at the crossroads of our people's fate. But prophecies are often misinterpreted." "Itesh, they're guidelines, not certainties. Then let's rewrite this one." Determination hardened her voice. "Tomorrow night is the last full moon of autumn. The Blood Moon. According to the lore you've taught me, it's when both shifter and silver magic are at their peak." "Yes, but it's also when the Silver Blades traditionally conduct their most aggressive hunts." "Exactly." A plan was forming in her mind, audacious and dangerous, but potentially transformative. "They'll expect an attack or infiltration. They won't expect a diplomatic approach." Pakuna's eyebrows rose. "Diplomatic?" "I'm going to walk through the front door," Itesh explained. "As Callum's bloodkin, I have the right to request sanctuary under the ancient codes of family honor. Codes his family still observes, according to my grandmother's letter." "That's insanely risky," he protested. Callum tried to kill you less than 48 hours ago. He tried to capture me, she corrected. He needs me alive to access the grimoire. And now that I know we're related, certain things make more sense. Like why he's been so focused on finding me specifically. He knows about the prophecy, too. Through the night, they refined the plan, preparing for every contingency. The true, Medallion would remain with Pacuna until Itesh could secure safe passage for the pack. If she failed, if Callum betrayed the ancient code of sanctuary, the Katani would retreat to Canada, fragmenting into smaller groups to survive. Dawn broke clear and cold over the Berkshires. As the pack made final preparations, Itesh found a moment alone with Celine, whose support had surprised her the previous night. "Why did you defend me?" she asked directly. "You have more reason than most to hate anything connected to the Silverblades." Celine's green eyes held a mixture of pain and wisdom beyond her years. "Because hatred consumes everything eventually, even the one who harbors it. I've watched it destroy packmates from within. Watched it nearly destroy me after Daniel was killed." She touched the scar that ran along her collarbone, a silver wound that had never fully healed. "If there's even a chance for another way, I have to believe in it. For Daniel's memory, if nothing else." The unexpected vulnerability from the normally stoic woman touched Itesh deeply. "I won't let you down," she promised. "See that you don't." Celine's mask of cool efficiency returned. "Because if Callum Ravenwolf betrays you, I'll personally ensure he regrets it with his dying breath." The journey to the Adirondacks took most of the day, the convoy of three vehicles taking indirect routes to avoid potential Silverblade surveillance. They established a base camp 5 miles from the Ravenwolf estate, concealed within a dense stand of ancient hemlocks. As twilight approached, Itesh prepared for her solitary approach to the estate. She wore a simple black dress borrowed from Selene, formal enough to honor the occasion, but practical enough to run in if necessary. Around her neck, she wore a silver chain with a small pendant shaped like a wolf's head. A Silverblade family, heirloom her grandmother had left her, which would help establish her identity. "The blood moon rises in 1 hour," Pacuna said, his voice tight with barely contained worry. "If we don't receive your signal by midnight, we'll assume the worst." "I'll succeed," she replied with more confidence than she felt. "The grimoire is the key to everything. Callum won't risk losing it by harming me." Their eyes held for a long moment, unspoken feelings hovering between them. Since her first transformation, something had been growing between them, a connection deeper than mere attraction or even pack bonds. In another time, under different circumstances, they might have explored it. Now, it remained unacknowledged but palpable. "Be careful," he finally said, pressing the true medallion into her hand. They had decided she would take it after all. The risk of Callum finding their hiding place and seizing it was greater than the risk of her carrying it. "I will." She tucked the medallion into a hidden pocket sewn into her dress. "The pack needs to be ready to move quickly, whatever happens." With final instructions exchanged, Itesh set off alone through the darkening forest. The Ravenwolf estate occupied a commanding position on a wooded hillside, its sprawling Victorian architecture a testament to old money and older secrets. As she approached the wrought iron gates, security cameras tracked her movement, and she made no attempt to conceal herself. "I am Itesh Blackwood," she announced clearly to the intercom. "Granddaughter of Marissa and Robert Blackwood. I seek sanctuary under the ancient code of family honor." A long silence followed before the gates swung open with an ominous creak. Two armed guards escorted her up the long drive to the main house, where Callum Ravenwolf himself waited on the broad stone steps, his expression a mixture of triumph and curiosity. "Cousin," he greeted her, the word laden with irony, "your arrival is unexpected, though not entirely surprising. The blood moon calls to both sides of your heritage, it seems." "You knew," she stated flatly. "You've always known we were related." "Of course." He gestured for her to enter the house. Why do you think you survived the night your parents died? Blood has certain privileges, even among enemies. Inside, the mansion was a study in opulence and antiquity, priceless artworks, flanking walls adorned with mounted hunting trophies. Itesh fought to control her revulsion as she recognized wolf heads among the displays. Callum led her to a formal sitting room where a fire blazed in a massive stone hearth. "Sanctuary is granted," he said, taking a seat opposite her. "For tonight, at least. Though I confess I'm curious what drove you to seek it, considering our last encounter." "I want to end this war," she replied simply. "And I believe the grimoire holds the key." A flash of surprise crossed his aristocratic features before he schooled them back to careful neutrality. "Bold of you to mention the grimoire so directly. Why pretend? We both know it exists. We both know it's here, beneath this house, in a chamber designed to be accessed only by someone of both bloodlines." "Indeed." He studied her with new interest. "And you've brought the true medallion, I presume? The one from your grandmother's grave?" Itesh refused to be startled by his knowledge. "Information seems to flow freely in both directions. We have our sources, just as the Katani have theirs." He smiled thinly. "Though I must commend your Pax rescue operation. Most impressive, if ultimately futile." Outside, the blood moon began its ascent, its copper-red light spilling through the tall windows. Itesh felt its pull immediately, stronger than any moon she'd experienced yet, igniting her blood and sharpening her senses to painful acuity. Callum watched her reaction with clinical interest. "The dual nature is difficult to reconcile, isn't it? The civilized human mind at war with primal instinct." He rose and moved to a cabinet, removing two crystal glasses. "My father believed the prophecy referred to your mother, that she would willingly help us eradicate the shifter bloodlines once she understood the danger they posed to humanity. When she rejected that path, chose your father instead. Well, Edmund Ravenwolf was not known for his forgiveness." "And what do you believe?" Itesh asked as he handed her a glass of amber liquid. "I believe prophecies are tools, not destinies." He raised his glass in a mock toast. "And that those of mixed heritage need not be defined by either side, but can choose their own path." The words, so similar to what Pacuna had told her, were unsettling, coming from Callum's lips. "What path have you chosen?" "Pragmatism." He sipped his drink. "The shifter problem can be managed without extermination, provided certain safeguards are in place. The grimoire offers possibilities beyond what either side has considered." "You want to control the shifting ability," she realized. "To weaponize it." "To regulate it," he corrected smoothly. "Imagine shifters whose transformations can be activated or suppressed at will. Not their will, but that of responsible oversight. The violence inherent in their nature contained and channeled productively." The very suggestion chilled her. "That's not regulation. That's enslavement. A matter of perspective." Callum set down his glass. "The blood moon nears its zenith. If we're to access the chamber, we should proceed." He led her through the mansion to what appeared to be a wine cellar. Beyond the racks of vintage bottles lay an older section where the foundation stones were exposed. At the far wall stood a door of solid silver, its surface inscribed with the same wolf and moon motifs as the medallion. "My ancestors built this chamber at the same time as the house," Callum explained. "A compromise between Robert Ravenwolf and his brother. A secure place to study shifter magic without risk to the household." "Or a prison for captured Katani," Itesh suggested darkly. "That too," he admitted without remorse. "History is rarely kind to the defeated." The silver door had no visible handle or lock, only a circular depression at its center. Itesh removed the medallion from her pocket, feeling it warm and pulse in proximity to the door. "Blood of both lines is required," Callum said, producing a silver dagger, along with the key. Warily, Itesh accepted the blade, using it to nick her palm before passing it back to Callum, who did the same. Together, they pressed their bleeding hands against the medallion as she fitted it into the door's depression. For a moment, nothing happened. Then, as the blood moon reached its apex outside, the medallion began to glow with intense blue light. The silver door responded, illuminating with corresponding patterns until the entire surface shimmered like liquid mercury. Slowly, soundlessly, it swung open to reveal a circular chamber beyond. Inside, a single pedestal stood at the center, supporting an ancient leather-bound volume, Sokka's grimoire, untouched for generations. The walls were lined with shelves containing artifacts of both traditions, silver weapons alongside stone, talismans, silver-blade chronicles beside Katani scrolls. "The collected wisdom of both peoples," Callum murmured, genuine awe in his voice. "Preserved in trust that someday, someone would bridge the divide." Itesh approached the grimoire, drawn by an instinctive recognition. The book seemed to respond to her presence, the air around it shimmering with potential. "Only you can open it," Callum said, remaining near the doorway. "The blood of Sokka and Raven Wolf combined." With trembling fingers, Itesh placed her hand on the book's cover. The leather felt warm, almost alive beneath her touch. As her blood from the still seeping cut made contact with the binding, the grimoire opened of its own accord, pages turning as if swept by an invisible wind. They settled on a double-page spread, covered with intricate diagrams and text in an ancient language she nonetheless understood perfectly, the ritual for shifting without the moon's influence. "Yes," breathed Callum, stepping closer. "The key to everything." "Not everything," came a new voice from the doorway. Pakuna stood silhouetted against the silver doorway, the true medallion gleaming at his throat, identical to the one Itesh had used to open the chamber. "How?" Callum's composure fractured for the first time. "Another of Sokka's safeguards," Pakuna explained, stepping into the chamber. "Three medallions, each capable of opening the door when paired with the right blood." His eyes met Itesh's, a silent question in their golden depths. She nodded almost imperceptibly. The medallion she had brought was real. They had decided the risk of deception was too great. But Pakuna's arrival was precisely as they had planned. The pack was in, positioned throughout the estate, having infiltrated during her diversion. "This changes nothing," Callum recovered quickly, drawing a silver gun from beneath his jacket. "The grimoire is open now. Its secrets are available to all of us." "That's where you're wrong," Itesh said, her hand still resting on the ancient book. "The grimoire responds to intent as much as blood. My grandmother's letter warned that it contains power that could destroy as easily as save. I understand that now." As she spoke, the pages began to glow, text rearranging itself beneath her fingertips. The ancient language shifted and morphed, revealing new patterns, different rituals, ones that had remained hidden from Callum's view. "What are you doing?" Alarm edged his voice as he raised the gun, aiming it at Pakuna. "Step away from the book, Itesh." "I can't do that." She met his gaze steadily. "This ends tonight, Callum. The cycle of vengeance and bloodshed between our families stops with us." Outside, the blood moon reached its zenith, its crimson light streaming through a circular skylight in the chamber's ceiling. The moonbeam struck the open grimoire, activating the ritual Itesh had initiated with her blood and intent. A shockwave of energy pulsed outward, knocking Callum back against the wall. The gun discharged, the silver bullet grazing Pakuna's shoulder before embedding in the stone behind him. "You've just killed us all," Callum gasped, struggling to regain his footing. "That's the binding ritual. It was deemed too dangerous, even by the ancients." "Not dangerous," Itesh corrected. the grimoire's knowledge flowing through her like a living current. Just misunderstood. It doesn't destroy. It balances. The energy continued to build, the ritual gaining momentum as the blood moon's light intensified. Throughout the estate and beyond, shifters and hunters alike felt its effects, a profound resonance that touched something primordial within their blood. Pakuna moved to Itesh's side, his wound already healing. "Are you sure about this?" "More sure than I've ever been about anything." She turned back to Callum, who was watching in horrified fascination as the ritual unfolded. The prophecy wasn't about choosing sides, Callum. It was about reconciliation. The one of dual heritage wouldn't end either people. They would end the conflict itself. "Impossible," he whispered, though doubt had begun to creep into his expression. "Our natures are fundamentally opposed." "Are they?" She gestured to the shelves surrounding them. "This chamber exists because Robert Ravenwolf and his brother recognized that both traditions held value. They created a space where the knowledge of both peoples could be preserved and studied together." The ritual reached its climax. The grimoire, lifting from the pedestal to hover in the air, its pages a blur of motion and light. From its center emerged a swirling vortex of silver and blue energy that expanded to fill the chamber. "What's happening?" Callum demanded, pressing himself against the wall as the energy washed over him. "Balance," Itesh replied simply. "The ritual doesn't suppress the shifter nature or weaponize it. It harmonizes it with our human side." The vortex engulfed them completely, and Itesh felt its transformative power resonating through her very cells. Not painful, but clarifying, as if layers of confusion and conflict were being gently peeled away to reveal a more integrated whole. When the light finally receded, the grimoire settled back onto its pedestal, its pages now filled with new text, the combined wisdom of both traditions, reconciled and enhanced. Callum stood frozen, his expression one of profound shock. "I feel different," he managed, looking down at his hands as if seeing them for the first time. "The ritual has awakened the dormant shifter genes in your line," Pakuna explained, his tone surprisingly gentle. "Just as it has given shifters greater control over their transformations. Neither side dominates. Both exist in balance." "But that's..." Callum struggled to process the implications. "The true purpose of the prophecy," Itesh finished for him, "not to choose between worlds, but to unite them." Outside the chamber, shouts and confusion had given way to an eerie silence. The blood moon's light began to fade as it continued its journey across the night sky, its task complete. "Your hunters will be experiencing the same awakening," Pakuna told Callum. "As are all Katani. The ritual's effects extend to bloodlines, not just individuals present." "You've changed everything," Callum whispered, a mixture of awe and fear in his voice. "We've restored what should always have been," Itesh corrected. "The division between hunter and hunted was artificial, created by fear and misunderstanding, perpetuated by vengeance. In the beginning, we were one people who chose different paths." She closed the grimoire gently, its purpose fulfilled. "Now we have the chance to choose a new path, together." Dawn found them on the broad terrace of the Ravenwolf estate, watching as Silverblades and Katani cautiously navigated this new reality. Old enemies regarded each other with wary curiosity rather than hatred, feeling the subtle but profound changes the ritual had wrought in their natures. "It won't be easy," Pakuna observed, standing at Itesh's side. "Centuries of conflict can't be erased in a single night." "No," she agreed, "but it's a beginning. For the first time, both sides can truly understand each other." Callum approached them, his movements betraying the newness of his awakened shifter senses. He had spent the night in intense conversation with Celine, of all people. Too bitter. Enemies finding unexpected common ground in their shared transformation. "My father would have considered this the ultimate betrayal," he said, gazing out at the mingled groups below. To become the very thing he dedicated his life to destroying. "And what do you consider it?" Itesh asked. A ghost of a smile touched his lips. "An unexpected inheritance, one that will take considerable adjustment." He glanced between her and Pakuna. "The question is, what happens now? The binding ritual has changed our natures, but not our histories. There's still blood between our peoples that can't be washed away so easily." "That's why we need leadership from both traditions," Pakuna said. "A council that represents the interests of all our people as we navigate this new world." "A council, led by someone who understands both sides," Callum added, his gaze settling on Itesh. "As your grandmother foresaw." The weight of responsibility settled on her shoulders. But it felt right. A purpose she had been preparing for without knowing it. "I'll need advisors I can trust," she said, looking meaningfully at both men. "From both traditions." Selene joined them, her green eyes reflecting the sunrise. "The pack is ready to acknowledge you as Alpha," she told Itesh. "Not just because of your bloodline, but because of what you've accomplished. You've done what no one thought possible."
"We
all did," Itesh corrected, including everyone in her gaze. "And what comes next will require all of us." As the others moved away to continue managing the transition, Pakuna remained at her side, his presence a steady comfort in the midst of overwhelming change. "When I first found you in Boston," he said quietly, "I thought my task was to awaken the Katani Alpha female, to bring you back to lead our people against our enemies. And now?" she prompted when he paused. His golden eyes met hers, no longer guarded, but open and vulnerable. "Now, I understand that your grandmother sent me on a different mission entirely. Not to make you choose a side, but to help you transcend them." "She was wiser than any of us knew," Itesh smiled softly. "Though I think she might have had another motive as well."
"Oh?"
His eyebrow arched in question. In answer, Itesh reached up to touch the side of his face, her fingers tracing the strong line of his jaw. In her letter, she wrote about her own love story. How she chose love over tradition. Just as my mother did. 3 generations of women who refused to be limited by old boundaries. Understanding dawned in his eyes, followed by something deeper and more profound. "And what is your choice, Itesh of the Moon Shadow Clan?" he asked, his voice a low rumble that sent shivers through her. "I choose a new tradition," she whispered, closing the distance between them. "One that honors both sides of my heritage, while forging something entirely new." Their lips met as the first full rays of morning sunlight spilled across the terrace, a kiss that sealed not just their personal bond, but a new covenant between peoples long divided. In that moment, Itesh felt the medallion warm against her skin, pulsing in rhythm with her heart, as if Sokka herself approved of this final fulfillment of her ancient vision. Later, as they walked among the mingled groups of shifters and former hunters, Itesh reflected on the strange journey that had brought her here, from a woman who had never known her true nature, to the linchpin of a historic reconciliation, all in the span of a few tumultuous days. "What are you thinking?" Pakuna asked, noting her contemplative expression. "The destinies aren't fixed," she replied, watching as Mecco demonstrated a partial shift to a fascinated group of former Silverblades. "They're shaped by the choices we make, and the courage to imagine something beyond what history tells us is possible. A philosophy worthy of both your heritages," he observed with a smile. "And a fitting foundation for whatever comes next." As if in response to his words, the medallion, now shared between them as a symbol of their united purpose, glowed briefly with blue light. The ancient magic it contained had been transformed by the binding ritual, just as they had all been. Transformed, not diminished or controlled, but elevated to its highest potential. Under the morning sun, where the blood moon had worked its ancient magic just hours before, Itesh embraced both sides of her nature completely for the first time. No longer torn between worlds or burdened by secrets, she stood firmly in a new reality of her own making, one where the spell that had once seemed a curse had become the greatest blessing of all. In the chronicles that would follow, historians would mark this day as the beginning of a new era, when ancient enemies became reluctant allies, and later, a single stronger people. They would speak of the woman who bridged worlds, the Alpha, who refused to choose sides, the leader who found strength in duality rather than division. But for Itesh, standing in Pakuna's embrace as the sun rose on this first day of a new age, such grand narratives seemed distant and abstract. What mattered was the simple truth that had guided her through the darkness, that love, when intertwined with ancient magic, could transform even the most bitter conflict into an opportunity for redemption. And under Pakuna's spell, a spell of loyalty, courage, and unwavering faith, she had found not just her heritage, but her future.